And this is true with broken link building as well. Like, the further down you get into a site, the less valuable that link is going to become. I think, like, if you're 5 pages deep into a website, it's going to become less and less valuable. And furthermore, if there are a ton of other external links on that site, it's going to become less and less valuable. And for, you know, beginners, just like think of it like, you know, there's a big piece of a pie, like that's the amount of SEO link value that you can pass on. So like if you slice that up in 100 slices, each little sliver is going to be less valuable. So when you're looking at doing resource page link building and broken link building on resource pages, you want to keep that in mind because there are sites that are high DA sites. Like EDU, you might get an EDU link, but if it's like an EDU link that is tucked away at the bottom of their site somewhere, the chances are you're not going to get much value out of that.
Hi, and welcome to the Optimize Podcast. My name is Nate Matherson, and I am your host. On this weekly podcast, we sit down with some of the smartest minds in content marketing and SEO. Our goal is to give you perspective and insights on what's moving the needle in organic search. Today, I'm thrilled to sit down with Vince Nero, the Director of Content Marketing at BuzzStream. We are 40 episodes into the Optimize Podcast, and you know what? I don't think we've spent enough time talking about backlinks, and that is exactly what we're going to talk about on today's episode. Vince and I go deep on building backlinks from beginner to advanced. We chat about guest posting, scaling outreach campaigns, digital PR, unlinked mentions, misinformation links, and more. And this episode of the Optimize Podcast is brought to you by Positional. You probably know by now that our public launch is on March 26th, but there's still time to take advantage of beta pricing and beta perks by signing up for our private beta ahead of the public launch. You can book a time with me to learn more about the private beta on our website at positional.com, or you can reach out to me directly at nate@positional.com. We've got a number of tools for content marketing and SEO teams, and we'd love for you to check it out. Vince, thank you so much for coming on the Optimize Podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Nate. Really pumped to be here.
So the first question I ask all of our guests before we talk about building backlinks is, how did you get into the world of content marketing and SEO?
Yeah, it's funny. I went to school for music, played the saxophone. So like I have a degree in jazz performance. So I was trying to be a jazz professional in New York City and just realized I needed to make some real money and started doing just general marketing stuff and got hooked up into the tech scene in New York City, like the startup scene, I'd say. And then I eventually took a course called SEO That Works. It was a binding backlinko course. And that like outlined a lot of the stuff that I started doing on my own as a freelancer. And then I got a job at Siege Media, which is basically where I learned the most and really cut my teeth in all of this, like the SEO world and content marketing, and worked there for 6-7 years. I had a great mentor in Ross Hudgens, the CEO there. And from there, I spoke at conferences and tried to kind of position myself as a thought leader in the industry for like creative content and SEO, like the intersection of all those things.
From jazz to Brian Dean, that's a really interesting story. Brian is a fantastic SEO, by the way. We had him on a podcast episode a few months back, and it's really one of my favorites. And I too have learned so much from the Backlinko site over the years. Brian and the whole team have done such a great job with the content on that website. It's just so helpful. Often I get asked, especially by like earlier stage companies, like how do we build backlinks and should we be building backlinks? And maybe for our listeners, just to take a step back, it might be helpful for us to first understand what is a backlink. And so I'm going to ask you a two-part question. What is a backlink and why are backlinks generally considered helpful or necessary as part of an SEO strategy?
So the easiest way I can explain a backlink is the way that I used to do it at this course I used to teach. And it's like, think of it like a virtual thumbs up for your website. Pretend you were on LinkedIn. If you got a like from Barack Obama or something, like it would mean a lot more than a like from me. And just so much as it would get a lot more exposure, it just carries a lot more weight. So you can think about it backlinks that way. There are certain sites that carry a lot more weight and they have It's called domain authority or domain rating. There's a bunch of different metrics out there from different tools. But essentially, what you're trying to do is just build up your authority as a website in the eyes of Google and in the eyes of users.
And why are they helpful?
So backlinks are the way that Google crawls through the web. So you might have heard this term. So essentially, they crawl through your website and they go from link to link. And that is always going to be the way that Google gets through a website and, you know, understands the way that the web is connected. So I don't think backlinks are ever going to go away. We plan on talking about just the strength of backlinks and where they're headed. It's a good kind of transition to that, because when people ask me, are backlinks ever going to go away or do they mean less? I always say that this is the way that Google traverses the web. So like, if links didn't exist, Google wouldn't be able to get from one place to another. So it's like a bedrock of the way that the web is connected. So I think they are always going to be important. And you can infer a lot from that statement. Like, and a more important link from a more important site will carry more weight because it is just seen by so many more people.
Yeah, and I know you mentioned domain rating or domain authority. I think that was a term coined by Moz, at least originally, and now it's kind of become a synonym for PageRank. And that's really where Google started, you know, as an algorithm. They developed PageRank, which is essentially a measure of the authority or weight of backlinks pointing to or from a given website. And it used PageRank, and they still, I believe, use PageRank. They just don't surface PageRank publicly anymore as a way to understand how helpful a website might be, as you suggested, or even how helpful a page might be. And I'll often talk with startups and they ask me, like, how many backlinks do we need to build? And it's often an impossible question to answer because it really depends on like how competitive your industry is, how competitive a different search query might be. And so for me, it's a very hard question to answer. And then they'll ask me like, how much time should we invest into building these backlinks? And so we're going to talk about those two questions, but I have a question for you first. You know, there's been a lot of volatility in the SERPs over the last year. There was the helpful content update, of course. There were a couple other updates, even the product reviews update in December. And so there's been a lot of change in search. And so I guess my question to you is, how important are backlinks in 2024? And as a follow-up, would you argue that they're more or less important than maybe they were a few years ago?
Yeah, this stuff is not going to stop. I mean, this is Google's job, is to constantly improve things. I think the question we should be asking is not, are links more or less important, but what type of links are more or less important? And I think what we're seeing is that Google is doing a better job of weeding out the low quality sites and low quality backlinks that you're getting. And maybe not necessarily weeding out, but devaluing some of these low quality backlinks. So my kind of main thesis with this is just, if you focus on quality and relevant backlinks in 2024, you're solid. That's what Google wants. That's what all this EEAT signals, experience, expertise, authority, and trust, and helpful content. They're pushing for quality content and relevant content. So like, if you can get quality and relevant links, you're good. So there's only a certain amount of like scalability to this. You really do have to kind of get in the weeds to do it. Building backlinks, it can be tough. And I think that's a good thing because it keeps people from gaming the system, or, you know, it prevents them from doing things at scale that can game the algorithm and kind of hurt the industry at large. It's a tough question to answer because I've been on the other side, worked at an agency where you have to hit numbers, you know, like a company asks you, hey, I need 10 links. You know, you're a junior marketer and you have to hit 10 links every month or something for this client. So like this pressure to hit a quantity specific number of links really puts a lot of pressure on you as a marketer to just deliver results in whatever way that you can. It's way harder to come back to a client and say, hey, we didn't hit that 10 links that we offered, but we got you 6 really quality ones. A lot of times they look at numbers, they look at a cost per link, how many, you know, if they're paying $1,000 for 10 links, then if you only give them 6 links, then their cost per link has gone up. In short, quality, relevant links are what are going to move the needle, I think, in 2024 and beyond, and probably have always. But that's my roundabout way of kind of explaining that and kind of where we're at as an industry right now.
Yeah, well, you've given me a lot to try to unpack. And, you know, I started my career in the consumer finances space. I was doing lead generation in categories like, you know, best personal loans and home equity loans. And so link building was a very big part of our strategy. I think we had like two or three full-time people on our team who were essentially building links all day long. God bless them. It was a very hard job. And for that junior marketer you mentioned, I assume it's also a very hard job, especially if it's not your own company. And I know on LinkedIn recently, you mentioned like, you know, a few different ways that we should be building backlinks or a few different high quality backlink building methods. And you also mentioned a few ways that we shouldn't be building backlinks or maybe outdated methods that don't work anymore. And so if it's okay with you, I want to run through each of these and just quickly figure out what this strategy is and how we should go about it. Does that sound good?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So the first strategy you mentioned that was fair game, it was good to do, is guest blogging on relevant sites. And the word here that was interesting to me was relevant. So can you tell us what you meant by guest blogging on relevant sites?
Guest blogging is essentially like you're reaching out to sites and trying to convince them to let you write on their site. And this is great. Like Google likes this as a branding thing, branding strategy, I should say, because what they don't like is when you purposefully reach out to somebody and ask them to add your link on their site. They don't like you writing a post that you are then going to include your own link. They've come out and said that, you know, technically, like, I don't think there's any way for them to really know if you do this the correct way. Like if I were to reach out to you guys and say, hey, like, would I be able to write a guest post on your site? But kind of like if I ghost wrote it and had the, you know, you, Nate, as the author, they would have no way of knowing that I actually wrote that site. And like, it would look like a natural link coming from you. So, you know, that's probably the best way to do it in a way that's like, an algorithm can't pick something like that up. But, you know, like the step below is to find a quality site that you can get a guest post on and become a guest author on their site. But you do have to look at the relevancy. So like for you guys, like you want to get somebody in the link building space, in the digital marketing space, like you're not going to get anything out of writing on a cooking blog or something, because think of it like that virtual thumbs up. I was saying, like, you want thumbs up from people that are in your space. Like, it's going to appear like you're more authoritative if somebody in the link building space is giving a virtual thumbs up to positional.
You said something interesting that I don't want to forget about. You said Google can pick up on signals that might suggest this is a guest post. Whereas if like that piece of guest written content was published under my byline on my site from somebody else, they wouldn't as easily be able to see that this is in fact a guest post and maybe it's a more natural link. I think that's where you were going. But if somebody reached out to me at Positional and said, I want to write a guest post for your site and you should publish it under your name, I would say absolutely not. Like I would just spam their email and not even get back to them. So like how would someone actually publish a guest post written by them under someone else's name on their website? Is that something that actually happens? Do you pay them? I guess just help me understand that.
You want to always provide value to someone that you're reaching out and asking for a link, right? You don't want to just say, hey, give me this link for nothing. So the way that you can do that on a site like your own would be look at a keyword that is valuable for your target. So if I was looking at your site, I would try to find a keyword that is very valuable for you that you haven't written a post about or you don't rank for yet, but maybe your competitors do. So, you know, in your case, I'd look at maybe Link Whisper or something like and see what kind of content they have ranking and that would be valuable for you to have on your site and position it in that way. You know, look at metrics like this is how much potential search you can get, or potential organic traffic you can get from this. This is how many links this post has gotten for your competitor. And I'm going to write this post for you free of charge with the idea that, you know, I'm going to include a link naturally back to my own site, but you're going to get this awesome quality piece of content that might have cost $400-$500 if you have a freelance writer writing it or however much time, you know, it takes you to write something like that. So providing value in that way, I think is huge and kind of framing it in a way that like, I'm taking work off your plate. I'm bringing you this this huge value. There's nothing really to lose there, except like maybe the quality of the post isn't great.
I think that's important to mention. Like for one, I would never entertain this or do this on our website, because like anything that's posted by Nate, like should be written by Nate, at least in my opinion. But I can understand like other websites not having, let's say, the bandwidth to create content and maybe needing a piece of content. And this feels like a win-win style of trade that's happening.
Sorry to cut you off. I think where this is most effective is sometimes like there are sites that have just like a, like written by the positional blog, you know, like written by positional authors or something, where it's like the, or the blog team or something.
The blog team.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen that sometimes. And yeah, I'm not saying like this is the best way to do it. I think that's, this is one strategy. I mean, the, like I said, the step down is the idea of just finding these sites that do accept guest posts, but doing it in a way that you're looking for a lot of different quality signals from these sites. So like you're making sure that the site has a high domain authority, domain rating. You're looking for site traffic, making sure that the site itself has a lot of quality organic traffic. You're looking for EEAT signals on the site itself. Like you're looking for author bios, you're looking for credibility signals on the site. You're reading on their site to see if the content they're writing is valuable stuff. That a lot of times you can tell if a site just exists to give guest posts out to other people. You look at their external links and it'll be like, you know, random external link to like some John's chiropractor service or something. Look at these sites for quality and relevancy, but then also like, does it just purely look like they're there to monetize a guest post strategy?
Yeah, I guess just to play devil's advocate, if I was writing a guest post, I would actually want my name and my brand and my byline contained on that guest post, because hopefully I've written such a great piece of content that like it convinces a reader to actually then want to go and engage with Nate somewhere else. But I think all of like the different signals you mentioned to determine like, is this a site I'd actually want to guest post on, makes a ton of sense to me. Like anytime I see like a website that's linking to like best online slot machines, that's probably not a website that like I would want to be guest posting on. Anyways, we'll move on a little bit. So the next thing that you mentioned we should be doing is to create content that generates its own links passively. Well, I mean, that sounds too good to be true. Like we've just done a ton of work guest posting that, you know, took me hours to write those pieces of content and do the outreach. But if we can create content that just generates links on its own, that seems like the way better option, I would think. So how do I do that?
Yeah, so this isn't going to be for everyone. This is not going to be for new sites that don't have a domain authority, don't domain rating built up yet. This is more going to be these established sites in the 60s, 70s, 80s domain rating, where you can kind of naturally rank for certain keywords without much effort. So the idea is to find keywords with high link intent. So if someone's writing a post about link building and they want to back up some of their claims in the post, you know, maybe they're saying link building costs $500 or something. A link costs $500. They want to go then find some study that tells them that a link costs $500. So you want to be that bit of research that they're doing. And there's certain keywords that have high link intent. So the clearest example of this is a statistics post. And this is why this strategy, it's been done to death at this point, but can still be somewhat effective. So basically, like a statistics post is just a list of resources that somebody, if somebody is writing a post, that's like the one of the clearest things that somebody might Google to try to back up their post, their claims on their post. So me, if I'm a good researcher, I want to produce helpful authoritative content. I want to back up all my claims and link out to other authoritative posts. So if you can be that resource, then you will start to attain links passively. So if you can get your post ranking, so say you're in like the top three or something, people are going to see that when they're Googling, you know, link building statistics or link building data or, you know, link building trends. And it starts to create this flywheel where you start getting more links, which helps you rank higher, which helps you get more links every time someone searches, which helps you rank higher. So that's the idea behind this like passive link growth, is just creating something that's tied to search volume where it has high link intent. A couple other examples of this are definitional queries. So something like, what is a CRM or something. Like if somebody was writing about CRMs and they wanted to quote somebody or they wanted a specific definition, then you become that definition. You try to get your post to rank for that term so that anytime that somebody Googles it, you're the first couple answers in there and they'll link back to your site, which helps you rank higher, get more links. And again, that flywheel keeps going.
We talked with Jeffrey Troll on this podcast. He was the head of SEO at Student Loan Hero, and they had a student loan statistics page, and I think it accumulated like 1,000+ backlinks over a period of years. And I think he described it as link bait, and it was an extremely important part of their strategy. I have one quick question about statistics pages. Does that data need to be original to your page, or is it fine to aggregate a bunch of other pieces or sources of information onto your, let's say, statistics page?
So it's like 100 times more effective if it's your own data, for sure. But plenty of people aggregate data. I think the way to do it, if you're aggregating, is pull a statistic that really seems impactful and write about it and why it's impactful, rather than just a big list of somebody else's statistics. So like pulling some type of insights or something, you want to at least do something better, one better than what's out there. And so like, if you're just seeing that everybody else in your niche is regurgitating everybody else's statistics, maybe go that extra step and give some insights or present it in a unique way, something like that.
I agree with you. At my first company, we actually created a ton of our own unique data through surveys and reports and licensed data sets. For example, we licensed Experience Credit Bureau data set, and we had, let's say, the credit scores of every person in every different city. And so we surfaced a lot of data that we had to actually pay for, but then became very linkable and unique on our statistics pages. Your third point here is broken link building. If I'm being honest, I have never had success with broken link building. And so I want to push back to just say, I don't think broken link building works, but tell me that I'm wrong. I want you to tell me that I'm wrong.
There's kind of two ways to do it. You can use it as a ideation, like jumping off point, like finding a site that has a broken link, right? That has a lot of backlinks, and then recreating that post and then reaching out to all those people that have linked to this broken link. So that's the first way to do it. What I had found was effective was kind of utilizing as a inroad, a way to like connect to a website and provide some value before then pitching my link to them. So I would find a list of resources that had a broken link on the page. And I'd say, hey guys, just wanted to let you know you had a couple broken links here. And I'm not necessarily replacing those broken links. I'm just using that as like a, hey, I'm showing you this thing that is helpful for you. And by the way, while you're at it, I also have this similar resource that might be a good fit on your page. So, you know, in student loans, like you would see this a lot, like a student loan guide post or something would exist on some resource page where that has a bunch of different resources, a bunch of different links to student loan, you know, student loan repayment guides. And so, you know, maybe I had a similar post about like a moving guide for new students or something. I would surface these resource pages that have these lists for that same target audience. You know, I would have my broken link checker, and I would find all these resource pages, go on each page, check for broken links. If I have it, okay, that becomes my inroad to then pitch my tangentially related article. So I'm not finding like creating a one-to-one replacement, but it's kind of more like a supportive outreach tactic for resource page link building.
You're about halfway into this week's episode of the Optimized Podcast, and I just want to let you know about our buyer journey product. It's a really cool one, and it just came out. It gives you insight into where users are traveling throughout your website. You can look at entry and exit flows. So for example, if you want to see all of the different pages that a user has traveled down by the time they've reached your Book a Demo page, you could do that. Or for example, if you want to see the pages that users go down or travel through after reaching your homepage, you can see that too. Positional's buyer journey product is meant to give you insights in terms of how users are engaging with your site and how they ultimately end up to their final destination. We'd love for you to check it out at positional.com. And now back to the rest of this week's episode. Yeah. And so I guess that maybe fundamentally be the difference in our approaches. I've always asked people to swap out like the broken link with my specific page, which kind of feels slimy.
I mean, I don't think it's slimy if you are very confident that your post is great. And that's where like, I think a lot of people kind of run into some of this stuff. Like at Siege, probably like to a fault, was like a perfectionist with like a lot of this stuff where it was like, hey, like if I don't really feel confident that like my link is better than the other links that are on this page, like I'm probably not gonna pitch it. So like I would spend a lot of time making sure that I talk to our designers and like our developers to make sure that like we were creating something really that much better that I felt confident in pitching it. So a lot of that starts at the ideation phase, and it's just like, okay, am I not doing this in a way that I feel confident enough? But I'm curious, what made you feel slimy about it?
Just broken link building. I don't know why, but I do actually really like resource page link building. I don't know why I feel that they're two different things. Maybe they're the exact same thing. At our first company, we had like two full-time employees that all they did was resource page link building. And the thing I love about it is it can be extremely scalable. And so for our listeners, I'll define it really quick. A resource page link building strategy is essentially finding resource pages that exist on the internet. For example, resource pages on colleges or high schools or middle schools or libraries or towns or even other businesses, and like taking your resource and pitching them to link to you from their large collection of URLs that exist on the resource page, or I should say alongside this other large collection of URLs that exist on this resource page. And so these resource pages exist everywhere, which makes this a very scalable strategy. And it's been a number of years since I've done resource page link building. I did most of my resource page link building from, let's say, like 2015 to 2019. But I've heard through the grapevine that resource page link building isn't as successful as it used to be, because like these resource pages are getting inundated with people asking them to link to random stuff on the internet. So I guess my question to you is, does resource page link building still work? And if it does, would you say that like the success rate has gone down quite a bit in the last few years?
I think it can be successful if you're choosing the right pages. And this is true with broken link building as well. Like the further down you get into a site, the less valuable that link is going to become. I think like if you're, you know, five pages deep into a website, it's going to become less and less valuable. And furthermore, if there are a ton of other external links on that site, it's going to become less and less valuable. And for, you know, beginners, just like think of it like, you know, there's a big piece of a pie, like that's the amount of SEO link value that you can pass on. So like, if you slice that up in 100 slices, like each little sliver is going to be less valuable. So when you're looking at doing resource page link building and broken link building on resource pages, you want to keep that in mind, because there are sites that are high DA sites, like EDU. You might get an EDU link, but if it's like an EDU link that is tucked away at the bottom of their site somewhere, the chances are you're not going to get much value out of that.
The second part of this question is, would you say that the success rate from an outreach email for a resource link building campaign is lower than, let's say, maybe it was in 2018?
Yes. I think that's the case across the board for all outreach, for link builders, digital PRs. And it's because it's this systemic thing, and this is kind of becoming my thesis. This focus on quantity over quality is forcing too many emails to be sent, too many unpersonalized emails to be sent, too many emails to be sent that aren't sent to the right relevant sites, too low quality content being pitched, to the point where people are just shutting them out completely. So yes, I think it's becoming less effective because the industry at large is focused on scalability rather than quality, creating awesome quality content that's really going to wow the person. And it, you that's why I said this earlier, like, do you really truthfully feel this is the best piece of content that deserves to be on that site? I think that's such an important question to ask. And it might be like naive, and, you know, some agency heads might be like rolling their eyes at a statement like that. But like, I think that needs to be like the guiding principle. And that was one of the reasons I really liked working at Siege, was because that was like one of the things that was always, you know, we had a great team of designers and front end developers, and that they were all kind of in on it to make sure that we were like putting out the best piece of content. So there's plenty of other agencies that do that. Unfortunately, there's plenty of agencies that don't.
I've had a ton of success with pitching video courses for some reason. I'll give you a couple examples of this. So like when we were doing outreach in the past for like a Kubernetes blog we were building, we created like the college students video course tutorial to Kubernetes. And we went and we pitched colleges, specifically engineering departments at colleges who often had resource pages. And it was fairly effective. We built like 20 or 30 links through doing this. But we found that, like, to your point of creating actually great content or unique content that we're actually pitching, and that leading to a higher success rate, I've at least found anecdotally that people love to link to video courses and tutorials. Is that something you've seen in your experience too?
I can't say that I have, but I mean, it makes sense, right? Like, that's great. That's a great piece of content that I think you put a lot of time and effort into building, and you feel confident that it's a great piece of content. I want to hit on something that you said. You know, you built 20 to 30 links to it, right? Like, put yourself in the client's shoes there. Like, how much did they spend on that, on the video course? Like 30K or something? Let's just estimate, right? 30K, and you got 30 links, right?
Well, we didn't spend any money on it, well, except for payroll. But, you know, maybe in terms of people time, we spent like, let's call it like $3,000 or $4,000 in maybe total people time on this.
Okay. All right. That's a lot better. But like, I'm thinking, you know, if you were pitching something like that, my point being like 20 and 30 links might not sound like a lot. And some people might be doing the math of like, okay, how much do I have to actually put in to get 20 and 30 links? And like, if you're at an agency or even a brand, you're thinking of it along those lines. I think it's important to understand then drilling down into like the quality of the links that you got. Like, I don't think it's enough for us to say anymore, hey, this got 20 or 30 links. And, you know, I do this all the time too. Like, I'm not saying I'm great at this, but like, I think we need to start as an industry reporting quality links, not just quantity, right? Like, 20 or 30 links that you got were probably quality links. If they're, you know, EDU sites and like, you know, on resource pages that looked quality. So when it comes to talking to a client about this or talking to a brand about this and trying to pitch an idea like this, you can then more confidently speak to, you know, the actual quality and potential quantifying of like a cost per link metric or something, because that's what a lot of people care about when it comes to creating content to then pitch it. I have found that that's a big friction point between agencies and brands, or, you know, brands with in-house link builders that are trying to pitch something like that.
Yeah. In my experience, and we tracked cost per link pretty religiously, I would say guest posting had the highest cost per link acquisition in terms of our team's time. Like, we weren't paying for the guest post, but like the cost to actually get that link there. I would say the second most expensive was actually resource page link building. But then oddly, like the third, or like the cheapest, least expensive option in my case to building links was actually like data-driven content and digital PR. Because often we would publish one of these reports or studies and it would accumulate like 100 or 200 links if it really went viral, which would just bring down the overall cost of link acquisition down dramatically. So I've always found that, like, in terms of time spent, like, digital PR was actually the cheapest. And so I guess I want to ask you, like, should we be doing digital PR? And have you found that that's also a pretty scalable strategy?
That's the one, man. Like, that's where I think we should be headed, and like most brands should be thinking about this, because it serves a lot of purposes. Like, getting your own proprietary data is great. You know, it can build those passive links that we talked about. If you can tie it to search, proprietary data is something that, yeah, is highly pitchable. Even if the bucket of journalists, you know, is getting smaller and smaller, like they have less time to entertain pitches and But if your info is truly good and there's a story there, like, I think you have a much higher likelihood of getting coverage. The last thing I'll say is, not sure where this is headed these days, but like SGE, the like search generative experience that Google is putting out, and everybody was worried was going to take away from clicks and take away from SEO and organic traffic. It still might, you know, I think Google's kind of scaling it back a little bit, but proprietary data is something that Google and AI can never replicate. Yes, you can feed it your proprietary data and like it'll eventually like become part of the corpus or whatever that it pulls from, but they're not going to be able to generate that. So like that will always be kind of AI safe content. And yeah, I think proprietary data and like the digital PR kind of survey data study approach is awesome. So yeah, even if you're not, I think you mentioned a couple times you guys did surveys. So like, you know, YouGov, OnePoll, even something like SurveyMonkey, although I don't know how much journalists really appreciate like a SurveyMonkey or like Google Surveys or something.
We used Polefish. Shout out to Polefish. You know, Polefish, it can be hit or miss, but we found that you had to be really, really diligent in the screening process. And in our experience, they got a lot better at that. But yeah, to your point on there being less journalists, I think that just means that journalists are busier than ever, the ones that still exist. And so if we are pitching something to a journalist, our approach was always to make it as easy for them to write that article as possible. Like give them the headline, give them the takeaway, give them the graphic. Like they just have to fill in the gaps and there's their piece of content for the day. And it's interesting you mentioned SGE. We've had a number of guests on this podcast who predict that like SGE was going to be rolled out everywhere in January. And that didn't happen. And I would agree with you that recently, it seems like Google has reiterated that SGE is just an experiment. I do just really quickly want to talk about some of the ways that we shouldn't be building backlinks. And a few of these are interesting because I still talk to startups all of the time who are building links these ways. So link exchanges, you mentioned we shouldn't be doing link exchanges. I guess I want to know why.
So a couple of reasons. Link exchanges, excessive link exchanges, is how Google explains it in their spam policies, is something that they don't like. One-to-one link exchanges are not super valuable because you're linking to someone's site and they're linking back to you. You kind of like nullify the link value that you're passing. So for that, you know, it's not as valuable for one thing. And Google says like excessive link exchanges are also not as valuable. So like that's the reason not to do it, like those two reasons. I think it's okay to do it occasionally, like naturally. And the way that people get around it is this like ABC three-way link exchange where it's like I would link to your site and you would link to someone else's site and they would link back to mine. Google's not going to be able to figure that out unless you're like doing it in a way that's very clearly just linking to the same people or something. So I think I don't like three-way. I don't like any link exchanges really unless it is natural. So like I never do them. I never have, but I know plenty of people that do it and it's really effective. So I think you just have to be smart. My general thought about poor link building practices is just like anything that you do to try to game the system and like get around Google's guidelines has some inherent risk. I mean, even buying links, right? There's some risk there. All it would take is for Google to put out some major algorithm update that nullifies people buying links. And like, if your whole strategy is positioned to buy links, like you're screwed. There's sites out there that do this and clearly tell people that they're selling links. I think those are the ones you shouldn't ever be buying links from because there's so much risk involved. I had a very, very interesting little interaction on LinkedIn where John Mueller from Google actually chimed in. So it was like, somebody was talking about buying links. And I said, like, there's a lot of risk in this. Like, I wouldn't do it for, you know, these low quality sites. And then somebody posted this big, long database, this Google sheet to like 3,000 sites that all sold links. It had the site name, the DA, DR, the trust flow, whatever, and the price, right? And out of nowhere, John Mueller's not in this conversation at all. He just comments, thanks for the link. And I'm like, okay. Like, does that mean like he made a little note? Like, let's go get these sites. Let's devalue all these sites. I don't know if that's exactly what's going to happen, but I think there is some truth to the fact that, like, the more that you publicize that you're selling links, like, that's a clear thing that's against Google's spam policies, buying and selling links for ranking purposes. Google's not going to value your links that you're putting out. So it benefits the site that's selling the link in so much as, like, they're making money off of people who, like, don't know any better. But from you as the buyer, it's not going to benefit you to have a bunch of links from a 30DA site that you bought these links from and everybody else is buying links from.
And to all of our listeners, unfortunately, we are not going to put a link to this massive spreadsheet that you can go and buy links from 2,000 sites to in the show notes. That will not be in the show notes, but you might be able to find it on Vince's LinkedIn somewhere if you look. Yeah, I imagine that John Mueller has, like, a big button that he can click, just like sitting in his office, and can just, like, hit a big red button. Yeah, and by the way, I agree with you. I don't think we should be buying links. A lot of our guests that we've had on this podcast do advocate for buying links, and they tend to be the agency owners and agency folks. And so I just wonder, like, is the agency world just addicted to buying links for their clients?
Well, look, I mean, it works until it doesn't, right? Like, I think there is some truth to the fact that, like, if you're doing it well enough to kind of hide it, hide the paper trail, like, Google's not going to know. And there's plenty of respectable sites that sell placements and don't put that rel equals sponsored in there when you're buying the link. So I don't think it's anything that, like, Google's going to be able to knock away in, like, one fell swoop with an algorithm change. But, you know, I talk about this with Paul, our CEO at BuzzStream, a lot. And, like, I think the general thought is, like, there is, yes, it's okay to do it, but there's risk. You got to be open to the fact that, like, one day these all might go away. Like, if Google gets smart enough to do it, or if you're buying from the wrong spot. So you got to be strategic. You got to be smart about it. If your agency is buying links, there's quality metrics you should be looking at. It's that same stuff that we were talking about for a guest post.
Yeah. Same playbook.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say too, like, with the buying links, diversify your strategies so much so that if link buying becomes something that Google clearly rolls out an algorithm, like, your whole backlink profile isn't totally shot.
Yeah, I agree with you. Link diversity is so important, because at the end of the day, Google doesn't want us necessarily building links. They want just a natural looking link profile. And so if we can be building links in so many different ways, it just makes our link profile look more and more natural. Vince, this has been so much fun. If we could go to the lightning round, I've got a few pressing questions I want to ask you. Does that sound good?
Yes, let's get into it. Yeah.
So one question I want to ask: no follows, are they helpful? And I want to preface this by saying we had a recent guest on that said that no follows still count. They're as helpful as they've ever been. And I guess my question to you would be, do you agree with Andy who said no follows are still quite valuable?
They're helpful for brand and exposure, but, like, SEO value, they will not pass it. Technically, like, you're saying to Google not to look at it, but it may lead to you getting more coverage or direct traffic. It may lead you to getting a link from somebody else that sees that no follow link, and they decide to do a do follow link on their coverage of it. So, you know, doesn't work directly, technically.
So tell me about BuzzStream. What does BuzzStream do, and why should I use it?
So if you're doing a lot of link building, digital PR, outreach, BuzzStream is basically a tool designed to help you manage all of the outreach. You can send emails, you can track your messaging, and build relationships and see, especially, like, when you're doing a lot, you can see who you've reached out to, what's been successful, and lean on some of those relationships that you've made already. So it's just a better way. You know, if you're doing it in Google Sheets, try BuzzStream, because it's a much better way to do it. That was my introduction to BuzzStream, and it was like an aha moment.
Is the right way to think about BuzzStream, it's almost like a CRM platform, but for link builders? Would that be accurate?
100%.
We'll actually include a backlink to BuzzStream in the show notes. So you've built at least one backlink today.
Podcast outreach. That's another one. That's another guest link building tactic.
That is a good one. And for anyone who's listening that wants Vince on your podcast, you should have him on. He's been such a great guest so far. And you should especially link to BuzzStream. So as far as the cost per link Like, I know it's going to vary dramatically depending on the industry that you're in, but can you give us at least like a ballpark range for what is a good cost per link acquisition?
500 to 1,000, I'd say, is like okay to spend.
If there was one website you could get a backlink on with any anchor text to any page that you wanted, which website would it be from?
Probably Google, you know, like link building tools from Google, right? Like,
that is such a good one. Like inside their search master guidelines. Yeah, that would be a good one because you'd probably get a ton of like referral traffic too. It would probably be great just for business as well. And maybe that's something we should be keeping in mind as we're building these backlinks too. And then last thing, I just have to ask, like, what's the number one mistake you see a company make in their outreach email?
If you're doing link building, this is not like digital PR, because I think it's a slightly different thing. If you're doing like link building, personalize your emails. I hate, and everybody hates the, hey, Nate, I read your article. It was really interesting. Or, hey, Nate, you do really great stuff. I have a post I want to pitch you. Hey, Nate, like, get personal. What do you like about the post that I just wrote? What do you like about my, like, why are you excited that I just started a job at BuzzStream? You know, like I'm sure you guys have gotten these emails where it's just like generic statement. And now I'm going to ask you for something.
Yes. Hi, Nate. I see that you're a human. Please link to my online casino page. Well, Vince, this has been so much fun. Is there anything else that you'd like to say to our listeners?
Let me just like repeat the like focus more on quality links. And, you know, if you're an agency, that's what you should be pitching. Try to get away from the like promising a quantity and start pitching quality links. At the end of the day, we are better off as an entire industry, as a web, you know, like as people receiving our emails, digital PR, like it has so many repercussions. If we can focus on building quality, relevant backlinks, it's going to help people personalize their emails better. It's going to help people push them to create better content. It's going to help people build better links. And it's going to, I think, send signals to Google that like, hey, maybe link building isn't as spammy as we think. And like, we can start to value links even more than we do now, because I think that's what has caused them to maybe rethink some of the link valuing. The more that people try to manipulate and do spammy things, that's when we get into trouble. So authentic link building is the way to go. Again, it might sound naive, but like it works. It's how you get results.
It depends on who you talk to, but that's SEO. And that's why, you know, there's so many different ways to win in SEO, but you know, the best practices and guidelines that you described, I think are great ones for our listeners. So thanks for that. And like I mentioned, there will be a link to BuzzStream in the show notes for all our listeners. And we'll also link over to Vince's LinkedIn, where he publishes a lot of great content. So you should absolutely give him a follow there as well. But Vince, thank you so much for coming on the Optimized Podcast.
Yeah, Nate, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Optimize Podcast. Just a quick reminder that Positional's public launch is on March 26th, and we'd love for you to check it out. On March 26th, you'll be able to sign up for our product without talking to me, which is very exciting. And we've got a number of tools for content marketing and SEO teams, including tools for keyword research, internal linking, content analytics, and our new Buyer Journeys product, which I think you're really going to like. So check out positional.com either before the public launch or on our launch day on March 26th.